2 years ago, you'll remember, we saw an increase in Sri Lankan Tamils seeking asylum in Australia, many arriving illegally by boat. They were desperate to escape the aftermath of an ethnic civil war which raged in Sri Lanka for 26 years. Then earlier this year, a United Nations report estimated the war killed 100,000 people and displaced hundreds of thousands more. Naomi de Souza was a Tamil fighter, part of the Tiger's first female contingent. In July, she was my guest to talk about her life as a child soldier in the conflict, and I began by welcoming her to Life Matters.
Thank you, Richard.
How old were you when you first joined the Tigers?
I was 17. Yeah, just turned 17, and I was thinking that life was going to end, so I decided that I needed to do something. But age didn't matter at that time for me.
And how clearly do you think you understood the risk you were taking?
Very little, to be honest. Although I thought I'll be dead, I completely believed I'll be dead by the end of it, but I did not think what would happen to my family, how they'd feel, and if I got hurt, what would happen to me then? My friend who came with me, all of those things I didn't think of. All I thought was, I'm going to be dead soon. I needed to do something before I died. I didn't want to die as a victim.
It's a very 17-year-old decision, really, isn't it?
It really is. I look back and, think 17-year-olds can be very brave that way.
Yes, and very certain.
Very certain, because you think you know everything, and I think that's universal to any teenager. So, I believed I knew what I was doing, and I was right.
At that time, how possible was it for anyone in the Tamil community not to be involved in the struggle in some way?
I think it would have been quite difficult because it's a small community. It's fairly isolated in the north and east of Sri Lanka. And where I was, at that time we didn't, although we had television, I must say that because of the war, you did not get, you know, international coverage or anything like that. There was no internet. So we were fairly isolated. We had local television stations controlled by the Tigers. So we're pretty much all we knew was about the war and what was happening to us, and pretty much bombarded with the information. And I think there were people, everybody was pretty much drawn into the conflict that way because there was random bombing and shelling. So it was hard for people not to be involved. But not everybody believed that becoming a militant or supporting the militants was the right way. Certainly my family didn't believe that. They preferred to think that there will be some international intervention.
You'd have to be pretty careful about what you said, though. You wouldn't want to be too critical and too loud against the Tigers, would you, at that time?
Oh, certainly not, because the Tigers were becoming fairly powerful. There were other militant groups while I was growing up. Yet by the time I was 17, pretty much all of the other militant groups were wiped out by the Tigers. They did not accept dissent in the community. Anybody who spoke against them weren't treated kindly. Yet, so people, moderates, kept quiet, pretty much. And that's what happened. And obviously, the ones that are powerful then are hurt.
So you came to live in Jaffna, which is a Tamil stronghold.
Yes.
To be with your paternal grandmother.
That's right.
Did she influence your political views, do you think?
Probably not in a direct sense, because she was totally against that sort of thing. I mean, my family are not political. No one in my family have ever been involved in politics or expressed views of the political situation then. Yet she was a very strong character, and the way she behaved, until then I was fairly naive and protected by my family, but being thrown into living with her, who she didn't particularly like me because I come from a... My mother was she's an Indian background, of Indian background, and my grandmother did not approve of her at all, and she wasn't happy about her son marrying my mother. And so she treated me with contempt pretty much. But I did feel influenced by her strong sense of her identity as a Jaffna woman, and I perhaps got drawn into it. But other than that, yeah, very little, I'd say.
So when you decided that you were going to go and do this, join the Tigers, did your family share in that decision?
Not at all. I didn't really tell them that that's what I was doing. I actually ran away, and I ran away with a bag of books. But if my family had known that I was going to do this, they would have done everything to stop me. And they were totally devastated because, you know, girls didn't do things like that, especially middle-class convent school girl, private school girls. And it was a shock to the whole community, pretty much, because I was one of the first girls to run away from home and join the Tigers in that environment. So my family was very upset, yeah.
There's that the moment when you do it in the book, which I find very touching, because you're with your sister, and you need to lose her. So you say, I'm just going to go and drop these over here somewhere.
Yes.
And you say goodbye to her.
Yeah.
And you know what you're going to do, and she doesn't, of course.
That's right.
And it's quite a moment.
Yes, because we were very close, as you would read in the book. We were just, it's just me and my sister, and we were fairly close, and we were always together, and I told her everything. And my mum used to constantly tell us to shut up, because we just talked all the time, as girls would. And we were close, and that day I felt like I was betraying her, and for a greater cause, so I felt like I had to do it. I walked, when I left her, I could see that she looked at me knowingly, and I felt that she sort of knew I was doing to do something.
Yes.
To upset everybody, yeah.
Now, you didn't do it by yourself. You went with your friend.
That's right.
What was that like, those first few days? Because you went with Ajanthi?
That's right, yep, Ajanthi. Well, although she supported the Tigers, because we talked about it quite a bit, and she did support them, but she never sort of suggested to me ever that she was going to also join the Tamil Tigers. So when I told her that I was going to go and see, to try my luck, she said, I'll come with you. And I didn't take her seriously at that stage. But once I got involved in discussing with the Tigers that I wanted to join, she said she was coming, and it took me by surprise. But she was a very committed Tiger once we got in there. In the beginning, they put us in a fisherman's hut. They didn't send us to a Tiger base where usually people would be sent to. And I think they were testing us.
Yes.
Yes, because they didn't believe the two of us would last.
Didn't they say to your mum to come and try and talk you out of it to see if you would leave?
Yes, they did. They did. That is quite extraordinary when you think about it, because they let my parents and her parents visit us pretty much every day before we got into the military-style training. But, they said, well, see how, you're free to go if you wanted to, because they just didn't think, they thought we were just being, middle class.
Dilettantes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I was starting to get a bit frustrated, but my friend Ajanthi, whom I assumed just came with me, became the one voice to keep me there strong. And she kept saying to me, this is a test, we've got to get through it.
On Life Matters today, my guest is Naomi D'Souza. She's a former Tamil fighter and author of Tamil Tigress, My Story as a Child Soldier in Sri Lanka's Bloody Civil War. So once the training started, what was it like?
It was difficult for me because I was not a particularly athletic kind of teenager. I prefer to sit and read if I can. And so that was a bit of a shock, but there was a purpose. And I had good friends. The girls got on pretty well. Mm-hmm. And I had a small group of friends. We laughed, joked as teenagers would. They were all teenagers as well. And I got through it, but I had to focus to the fact that it was for a greater cause, that I was going to become a Tamil Tiger militant at the end of it. And so I got through it, but it was horrendous because the conditions were so primitive. We were filthy, we couldn't wash regularly, and things like that was really, really difficult for me. But once a week we would have a day for being creative, so that also kept me going. So I could write plays and sing or perform. That was my avenue too.
You weren't the only girl, but how difficult was it to be a young woman in these circumstances? Were you fearful that you might be sexually attacked? Or
not with the Tigers, because Tigers, one of the reasons I joined the Tigers, it was because I admired their discipline. Their leader expected them to be a highly disciplined force where you're not allowed to take lovers, you are not allowed to drink, smoke or gamble or anything like that. And you couldn't even read novels because they thought that corrupted your mind. And I admired it. I admired the discipline and I had no concerns for my safety within the Tigers. Of course, with the troops, that was a different story.
Yes. In fact, there's an incident later on where you can hear them. They can see that there's girls, or is it just you alone when they say, get the girl, get the girl?
Yes.
And of course, you know what could happen if they do get the girl.
That's exactly right, because they would, they would always try to capture female militants, because they could rape them, torture them, and then eventually you get killed. And that's one of the reasons the cyanide capsule that, as tigers, we carried was a great thing to have, because you thought if there was a possibility of ever getting captured, you would take it and kill yourself.
Were you accepted, you and the other young women, as equals by the male fighters?
Well, not really, because I think we were the first group of females there to be fighting alongside men. And occasionally I did come across of their attitude. In general, the society, the Sri Lankan Tamil society, doesn't view females as equal. And to me, that was a great sadness, really, because I didn't believe that that was right. And that was partly my influence of why I became a tigress, because I thought I could do what men could do and we should be equal. And funnily enough, that was the one avenue that was left for me to, you know, explore as well in terms of being a woman and contributing equally to the society. And I did come across attitudes, but not blatantly, but it was very subtle. They would make funny remarks and stuff, but they were also protective of you. So I guess, yeah, we were never equal because the decisions were always made by men. Yeah.
Now, there's lots of terrifying moments when you are involved in the fighting. But really, the low point is that your friend Arjunthi, a few others as well, is killed. And that is just a terrible point for you, isn't it?
That was a very, I think it's a life-changing moment. I'm sorry. Yes, because she was my friend from primary school, and suddenly I guess when I joined the Tigers, I never expected her to die before me. And I somehow assumed that I would be dead before her. And I don't know why I thought that. And that's being part of a teenager. I think you think you're invincible. All your friends will be always there.
Yes.
You never think something like that would happen to you. But
and it's easier to think of that you'll die before your friend, isn't it? It's a much easier thing.
It is.
You don't think, well, if my friend dies before me, you don't think that. And so then you don't imagine how much it will hurt.
That's right. I didn't think, and I did not think so many of them would die all at once.
Yes.
So when it suddenly happened, although I saw them die, because it's one of those things I processed only so many years later when I was rewriting the whole thing, that I realized I actually saw them die, and yet it didn't sink in at that very moment, because I kept thinking they're falling. But they're there, they're still there, and I needed to save them somehow, that I needed to get them, and that's all I kept thinking. And it's almost, you know, as cliched as it sounds, it was all in slow motion, and there was like this smoke screen around me. I could see it happen, but it wasn't real. And it's only later on that when I heard somebody mention that such and such died, and then they mentioned my friend Arjunthi and a couple of other people.
Yes.
And there were 10 of them who died on that day. And it hit me, and it was one of those things I couldn't take, and it was such a shock. And
it's one of the key moments in you deciding that actually you can't do it anymore.
Exactly, because I think the reality of war, the reality of choosing violence as a means to anything, really, it just shows you the consequences right in front of you. And I think until then I've seen dead bodies. But it's never happened to me personally. And I think when I saw that, it was very difficult because I realized we can keep fighting and we're going to have more and more sadness, and that we're going to continue to lose people, and we might achieve, what are we trying to do here? So, it changed everything for me at that moment, because I realized this is not the way I want to achieve equality for the Tamils.
And the decision to leave, it put you in another kind of danger. As your leader said, everyone will be after you.
That's right. And even to this day, I'm surprised that I had that complete disregard for my life in that way, that I said, that's fine, I'm going to leave because this is not the way I want to live my life. And again, that comes down to being a teenager as well, I think. Yeah, it's just the same way you join, the same way you decide, this is not the way I want to do it. It's wrong. And I made that decision, and I decided I was going to walk out, and I didn't know whether my family would take me back. I didn't even know they were alive, whether they where they were, nothing. And I was so far away from home.
Mm.
in the jungles. And I thought, I'm going to leave. And then they said, okay, we'll take you to this house and leave you there. And I thought, yeah, I'll find my way out. I'll get an education one day and I'll live my life. It was one of those weird things that I strongly believed that it would happen to me. That I never, I did in between question after a few days that my mother didn't turn up or I didn't know what I was going to do. But I had this deep down strong belief that I've lived through so much that life is going to be better for me.
Yes, yes.
That, one day I will make it through all of this. So I think it's just that undoubted belief that got me through to this day I am, which is strange when you look at the circumstances at that time.
Well, of course they take, and it's interesting because we're sitting here talking about this and you're saying, didn't know if they would take me back. And now, of course, you've got your own kids and you know, as a mother, of course you would.
Of course.
And your mother does. And they very quickly get you off Sri Lanka.
That's right.
You go to India quickly.
Yeah, very quickly. They had already, my mum had already had a passport for me. She had everything organized and she just executed the whole thing straight through. And I think she had probably planned it, that she was waiting and waiting to see whether I'll turn up somehow. And she had everything figured out. And so she took me to India and put me in this very exclusive boarding school run by the Irish and French nuns and told them that I wasn't allowed near the gate until I finished school.
And you did brilliantly.
Well, only because I think anybody who puts their mind to something can achieve certain things.
Were you a SWAT before, or was this? You go off to war and you come back and you're like, I'm going to do amazingly now.
No, it's the focus. It's the focus. And I think that's the only thing I had. That's the only thing that was real to me at that point, because I hadn't talked about this to anybody. What I, you know, had left, my mum didn't ask me a single question what it was like for me being in the Tigers or what happened to me there. She knew that my friend had died, that I had made it. That was it. She did not care. She did not ask. So it was my little sister whom then I kept telling her things, and she would just listen. I mean, she was younger than me by 3 years, and she was great therapy because I was able to talk to her. But other than that, I had nothing else. And so when I was put in boarding school, I just decided that I had this chance. I wasn't going to let go of it. So I put full focus on it, and the teachers were very good because they could see that I had because until then I hadn't studied in English. It was a new language in that way, because I knew some English, but not very good. And I had to suddenly sit these exams, all my high school exams, in a year, in English. So they helped me after school, and I put great effort and came out of it.
You've actually had been a huge success story since then. You've made your home in Australia, and all your immediate family, I think, has migrated.
Yeah.
And now, of course, it's 2 years since the terrible final battle that ended the civil war in Sri Lanka. Has life improved for the Tamil community?
Well, not in Sri Lanka. I mean, as you know, most Sri Lankans have left the country as refugees, and they continue to arrive. Those who couldn't come by plane continue to arrive by boat. But it's because it shows how terrible it is for the people over there. There's great human rights violations. And recently there has been some evidence and the UN report that shows that there had been human rights violations during the final phase of the war by both Tamil Tigers as well as the government soldiers. And somebody needs to be held accountable for these violations, because there's no justice system in Sri Lanka. You can't just say, okay, the war's over, forget everything, move on. You can't do that, because whether it's murder in the streets of Sydney or mass murder in Sri Lanka, the victims need answers and they need to see justice happen to them before they can then move on with reconciliation. You can't talk about reconciliation without having dealt with the terrible effects of war.
Indeed. I mentioned you've got kids of your own now,
yes.
Raised here, relatively peaceful Australia.
Yes, definitely.
Do they understand this about you, about your story, about why you did what you did?
No, they're very young. They're very young. They're only 2 and 4. So, no, they make great demands of me. You know, they don't understand. And I said to my eldest daughter the other day, I've written a book. And she goes, oh, only one book.
I can do that in an afternoon, Mum.
That's right. They're children. But they're a great grounding factor, you know.
I mean,
I find them to be, you know, they just bring you down to earth. And that's one of the reasons it helps me to look to the future as well, having them and sharing this experience with them one day. And I would like them to travel to Sri Lanka and see. But I'm too scared. I wouldn't dream of going to Sri Lanka anytime in the near future.
It's part of their heritage, and I hope in the future they can do that.
Yes, I hope so too, yes.
And I'm really pleased you came in today. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Naomi D'Souza is the author of Tamil Tigress, My Story as a Child Soldier in Sri Lanka's Bloody Civil War. It's published by Allen and Unwin. You're with Life Matters on ABC Radio National Summer. Richard Adie with you. Still to come today, living as an ecotarian. But next, some tips on navigating modern life with the journalist and website publisher, Mia Friedman.